Good day, everyone. My name is Keith, and I'll be your conference operator. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Elementia Earnings Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. There will be a question-and-answer session after the speaker's opening remarks, and instructions will be given at that time. Thank you. I will now turn the call over to Alfredo Recchi, Elementia's Investor Relations Officer. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, operator, and good day, everyone. And welcome to Elementia's third quarter 2018 earnings conference call. Joining me today is Chief Executive Officer Fernando Ruiz-Jacques and Chief Financial Officer Juan Francisco Sánchez-Cramer. Please be advised that this call is for investors and analysts only. During this call, we will be discussing Elementia's performance as per the earnings release issued yesterday. If you did not receive the report, please contact iAdvise in New York at 212-406-3694 or visit our website www.elementia.com under the Investor Relations section. Let me remind you that the forward-looking statements may be made during this conference. These are based on information that is currently available and are subject to change due to a variety of factors. For more detail and a complete disclaimer, please refer to the earnings release. Also, all figures discussed are in Mexican pesos unless stated otherwise. It is now my pleasure to introduce Fernando Ruiz-Jacques to begin with the main highlights of the quarter.
Thank you. Thank you, Alfredo, and welcome everyone. Thank you for being with us today. It's an exciting time, and we continue to transform the company and prepare ourselves financially and operationally for another phase of growth and expansion. Last quarter, I started my message with Elementia's strategy, which was summarized by becoming a comprehensive platform that offers a broader product portfolio and then evolved towards a company that delivers solutions for the construction industry. Now, I would like to start my message by briefly explaining the role of each business unit within this flight plan. Starting with the cement business unit, this is where we're going and where we have focused on organic and inorganic growth throughout the Americas. Our focus will remain on expanding this business. The other two business units will help accomplish this goal by delivering cash flow. Having said that, and for the time being, the building systems has two roles. In the U.S., we have a great growth opportunity, including the Indiana facility, where we are very well positioned to leverage for market dynamics and therefore increase volume and margins. In Latin America, we have the potential to become the supplier that will help industrialize the construction process, but for now, we need to regain the business profitability. And third, the metal product business will continue generating strong cash flow that will continue funding the growth in other divisions. Now, in terms of our short and medium plans for each unit, in Cement Mexico, we have accomplished our growth promises ahead of the expected time frame. In summary, we completed the ramp-up of the Tula facility expansion by reaching optimum capacity utilization level by anticipating market dynamics and prioritizing volume positioning by temporarily changing the bag's bulk mix. We plan to gradually go back to the original mix throughout 2019. Growth from now on will be more moderate until we start operations of the grinding facility in Yucatan in the second half of 2019 and then take the next steps in our growth path. For now, and in the following few quarters, we expect the market to remain somehow contracted as statistically proven in a post-president election 12-month time frame. In the cement U.S. unit, during 2018, we have faced strong headwinds, including A, an equipment failure in South Carolina facility with less than 5% chances of happening. This incident affected us longer than the time it took us to fix the damaged equipment. However, I'm very proud to say that we have recovered more than 90% of the lost volume in less than 6 months by recovering lost customers and gaining new ones. B, additionally, operating impacts caused by Hurricane Florence. And C, tougher competition in the New England region. Nevertheless, we continued our three-year CapEx plan to regain production and supply reliability. The third quarter results show the trends we expect in the following quarters. Moving on, in Costa Rica cement, we have accomplished what we promised ahead of the expected timeframe. In summary, in only 3 months of operation, we have reached more than 50% capacity utilization rate, that is close to 9% market share. We expect to complete the full ramp up by mid-2019. Going now to the building systems unit in the U.S., we are 3 months behind schedule to reach break-even point in the reopening of the Indiana facility. We're now expecting to reach it by the first quarter of 2019. One of the main reasons of the delay is the harsher winter we faced at the beginning of the year and having one of our main competitors recover market share. We have done the necessary adjustments to get back on track in the following quarters and continue growing faster than the market. In building systems LATAM, we are a quarter behind schedule to complete the learning curve of the technology change. The shift from natural to synthetic fibers meant a completely new formulation and major changes in process, equipment, and team. We also faced headwinds in the region at macroeconomic levels and political environment that reduced consumption in the region and put pressure in prices. Therefore, in the short term, the focus is to regain profitability by rationalizing and right-sizing the business. This will enable us to continue being a fast adapting, evolving, and decision-taking organization. The quarter results show the cost derived from these programs, but we expect to render savings starting from the fourth quarter. We're also redefining the business growth strategy, focusing it back on core product segments and channels, and remove less profitable SKUs from our portfolio. Our expectation for 2019 will show the beginning of the recovery, having ended the transition year of 2018. And finally, going to the metal product division, during the quarter, we faced a steep fluctuation in copper prices and FX appreciation, which was partially translated to the market. The impact happened so rapidly that given our inventory levels and transformation timeframe, we were unable to fully translate it to the market. In other words, when there are steep fluctuations, we have the impacts on our inventory value that can either be positive or negative depending on the copper price trend. In order to reduce our exposure to these effects, we're in the process of reducing inventory levels and the transformation timeframe by reducing SKUs, focusing on higher value products, revisiting the pricing strategy, and redefining the hedging mechanism. It is worth emphasizing that we have a markup price mechanism that helps us pass through commodity fluctuations to the market. Additionally, copper prices are showing an upward trend that should help normalize figures for the business in the short term. So we have three short-term problems. As we continue expanding our business, we have also taken action to financially prepare ourselves. This past Monday, at an ordinary shareholders meeting, our shareholders approved a capital increase of up to 1.5 billion pesos through a rights offering. Elementia will issue up 120 million new shares at a price of 12.50 pesos per share, which will generate proceeds of around $80 million. These funds will be mainly used to improve our leverage ratio and potential additional investments in the cement division. I reiterate our commitment to continue our growth strategy in a manner that is prudent and accretive for our shareholders. With this, I conclude my remarks. And now, turn the call over to Juan Francisco for further details on our financials and the rights offering transaction. Juan Francisco, please go ahead.
Thank you, Fernando, and to all for your continued interest in Elementia. My remarks will focus on a little more information with regards to the financial and operating results. The third quarter of the year began with softer dynamics built by an overall deceleration in the market consumption, throughout Mexico and Latin America. Additionally, there was a marked contraction in the demand for metal products and building systems. We also saw a continuation of higher energy costs and a steep fluctuation in copper prices and currency conversion. Despite this, the challenging conditions did not stop Alimentia from reaching 5% revenue growth on a consolidated basis during the third quarter and 8% for the nine-month period, mostly driven by 8% higher sales volumes in Cement Mexico with the optimized capacity utilization at Tula facility, as well as 12% volume improvement in the U.S. Building System division. EBITDA was 21% lower than the third quarter 17, reaching 1.02 billion, since the solid performance of the U.S. Building Systems and Mexico Cement were unable to fully offset figures in the other businesses. EBITDA margin, however, improved 16 basis points compared to the last quarter. It's important to mention that, as in the previous quarter, results include charges from the capacity rationalization and right-sizing in LATAM Building Systems business, as well as extraordinary effects from the ramp-up process of our Indiana facility in the U.S., totaling close to 110 million. I'd like to emphasize that these negative impacts will render savings and additional profits starting from the fourth quarter and on. Lastly, Elementia reported a net income of 8 million for the third quarter, which represented a significant 98% decline compared to the previous year. This change was mostly driven by lower levels in operating income combined with higher integral cost of financing. Turning now to the balance sheet. Cash before CapEx reached 1.39 billion for the nine-month period, mainly due to cash flow generated from improving our working capital, as mentioned in the second quarter. Total investments so far total 1.4 billion, out of which 1.3 are allocated towards organic growth, including maintenance for all operations, assets improvement in the U.S. Cement, and bolt-on expansions during the year. The net debt position total 14.9 billion, an increase that was due to a lower cash position resulting from the aforementioned investments. The net leverage ratio therefore reached 3.73 times, thus complying with the covenant set by financial institutions. We remain committed to seeking and implementing strategic deleveraging initiatives, and we will continue generating cash flow from working capital. Now, I would like to reiterate our commitment and focus to our organic and inorganic growth strategy, while never compromising financial discipline, particularly when obtaining the necessary funds to take advantage of the opportunities, which, by the way, shows our shareholders' commitment towards the company. As such, this past Monday, at the company's ordinary shareholders meeting, our shareholders approved a capital increase for 1.5 billion through a rights offering mechanism. Elementia will issue up to 120 million shares at a price of 12.5 per share, thereby generating proceeds of close to $80 million. The rationale for this rights offering mechanism is, first, it gives all Elementia shareholders, that is, controlling and minority shareholders, equal participation rights, which is important to us. We want to make sure that our shareholders are all deriving value. Second, this mechanism is a non-dilutive, therefore, all of our shareholders, again, are given the opportunity to strengthen their commitment in Elementia and share in the economic benefits of its growth and value creation. And third, it is in line with the financial discipline Elementia is known for. Mainly, we will not be forced to surpass our leverage levels with higher debt to fund our growth projects. Now, in the event that any shares remain unpurchased, the board of directors has decided to offer a second round according to the acquired shares during the first one. Again, in the event that any shares remain unpurchased once the second round is concluded, the board of directors has the right to choose between the two following options: A, cancellation of the non-paying shares, or B, the absorption by the controlling shareholders. We are confident that the rights offering was the best choice to increase capital to support our growth strategy of expanding our footprint in core businesses. We expect to use these funds towards deleveraging and investment to continue growing in the cement division, like the Yucatán project. Now, let's move on to the operation performance and expectations for the rest of the year. The third quarter numbers came in below the same period last year as we faced several external factors altering operations in all three divisions, including Hurricane Florence in the U.S., presidential elections in Mexico, metal prices, and currency fluctuations. It is important to mention that we have started to see a more promising fourth quarter, and growth levels are showing hints of stabilization, and we expect an improvement in cash flow from working capital and profits that will give us the flexibility and financial power for deleveraging and funding further growth. Going in detail per business unit, first with Cement U.S. At the beginning of the year, this division was heavily impacted by the failure of the finish mill of the South Carolina facility at the commissioning phase, setting us back in our plan for gaining market share. However, I'm pleased and proud to report that both revenue and EBITDA posted a 6% growth for the quarter. We have advanced significantly in our objective of production reliability and reach of our objective of client recovery of over 90%. And as we speak, we continue to improve. As a result, volumes decreased only 3% in the quarter, despite the temporary stoppage of the cement production in South Carolina facility that undertook emergency protocols and was evacuated because of the Hurricane Florence. The stoppage lasted a week. On the upside, I'm happy to announce that our employees and their families remain safe throughout this devastating event. It is very important to mention that Q-over-Q basis, the improvement was astonishing. On EBITDA basis, we improved $155 million, or more than 300%, from $49 to $204 million. And the EBITDA margin improved from 5 to 16%. Moving along, and despite the expected volume decline of 1% aligned to Mexico's statistical electoral cycle, Cemex Mexico posted a single-digit EBITDA and revenue growth of 3 and 7% year-over-year. Our margins remain stable at 46%, and we do not expect any contractions in the fourth quarter. We trust that we will be able to continue with the current cement trends thanks to the construction GDP expectations. It is important to mention that remittances are also contributing, having reached a historic high in the third quarter. We are confident that having reached optimum capacity utilization levels in Mexico, we will be able to navigate the current environment of uncertainties, showing double-digit growth at year-end on an accumulated basis. Finally, the grinding operations in Costa Rica are booming and showing a great progress. EBITDA margin reached 7% and over 50% of capacity utilization was reached. This was done in just 3 months of operations. We are in a good shape to achieve our expected ramp-up plan of 2 years by leveraging and on self-consumption and revenues to third parties with EBITDA margins expected of close to 20%. Moving now to the building systems, consolidated EBITDA for the business fell 60% year over year, same as last quarter, due to the various external factors impacting both U.S. and LATAM. Yet, it has improved on its EBITDA margin on a key over key basis in 1%. We remain confident that 2019 will be a recovery year that could show EBITDA margin expanding from current 6% to somewhere between or around 8%. For the Latin America region, we believe results bottomed in the third quarter with a beta down 64%, mainly due to the technology changes that includes a new formulation, a completely new formulation, different raw materials, including the migration from chrysotile to synthetic fibers, and production process, which brought additional costs and a steep learning curve. We expect a one-off impact for full year 18 of approximately $250 million, of which more than $200 million has already been registered. EBITDA was also lower due to the continued weak economic growth in LATAM, especially in the Andean region. In response to the situation, we've implemented a strategic plan focused on profitability by going back to basics, meaning focus on corrugated panels while we continue to develop our mission, our main vision of migrating to flat panels and integrated solutions in the medium and long term. But first of all, the target is to regain profitability of the business. By going back to basics, we will be able to satisfy current customer needs that are closely correlated to the economic conditions in the region. These panels offer quality products at affordable prices while we work on preparing the market to migrate to flat panels. 2018 is a transition year for the building systems in Latin America, with the third quarter 18 showing one-time costs and expenses related to these restructures, capacity rationalization, and changes in raw materials. We expect a full year 2018 EBITDA below 2017. Nevertheless, we foresee a turnaround to help drive growth in 2019. In the U.S. operations, the Indiana plant continues its ramp up and could reach 30% utilization rate by year end. In turn, its EBITDA margin could grow from 8% currently to somewhere between 10 and 12% next year. While break-even is approaching in the first quarter next year, and costs are already going down because of this, it could take 4 to 5 years to reach normalized capacity utilization, including or implying 10 to 12% higher volumes year over year and 18% EBITDA margin in a normalized basis. Total revenues for the region reached $895 million and EBITDA fell 54%. This derives from the comparing a peak 3Q17 versus 3Q18. Last year, this quarter presented an unbeat numbers as we leveraged from our main competitors operating problems at the time and temporarily gained part of their market share. On a pro forma basis, excluding impacts from the reopening of the Indiana plant, EBITDA in the U.S. operations grew 7% during the 9 months of 2018. Turning now to metal products, the business presented a one-time event that hasn't been seen in the last 7 years. This came from its exposure to commodity and currency fluctuation risk. The third quarter 18 suffered from the combination of lower copper prices caused by the imposed tariffs to China from the U.S. and the appreciation of the Mexican peso as a result from the new trade agreement that strengthened the trading relationship of the three North American economic powerhouses. This effect was mostly notable in August. For the quarter, revenues reached $2.1 billion, that is 1% down year over year, and EBITDA of $97 million, representing a 58% year over year decline. The good news is that copper prices are starting to stabilize and showing recovery. Thereby, we expect a much positive fourth quarter and year end. The division will continue serving as a very strong cash flow generator. In summary, and on a consolidated basis, we expect 2018 figures somehow lower than 2017. Thank you. And at this point, I want to ask the operator to please proceed with the Q&A session.
And at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. You can remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Once again, star and one on your touch-tone phone. We'll take our first question from Mauricio Cerna with UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. Just very quickly on Mexico, on the cement business, I just want to get your thoughts on pricing, you know, going forward. Seems that, you know, as you mentioned on your remarks, the dynamics are not going to be that strong, at least, I guess, over the next 6 months. So given that you're facing this energy cost pressures already reflected in EBITDA margins this last quarter, you know, is pricing a lever that you would use to offset this? And I guess if you could maybe talk a little bit more on the metals business, you know, you provided the profitability per ton in the press release, which is very good, but I guess, I mean, we've seen that also deteriorate significantly this quarter. So, I mean, is there any target that you're thinking of for that particular metric long term? Thanks.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mauricio. Thank you for your question. Regarding cement price, as we stated before, yes, we see a more complicated fourth quarter. The market dynamics are beginning to complicate. Our strategy here is switching the mix. No, we have sold more bulk than bags lately. So we believe that by switching to more bags, we will be able to compensate what is happening out there in the market dynamics.
I know. Going to your second question on metals, if you saw the chart that we included in the release, what we tried to show there is the impact of the fluctuation of prices from the point that we buy the raw materials to the point that we sell the products. So just as an example, in August, the difference between the acquisition price to the selling price was close to 26 pesos per kilo. And we sell roughly 4,800 tons per month. So just that impact gives you an idea of the full potential impact that we would have faced if we didn't have the pass-through strategy and the hedging strategy along with the business. In this regard, of course, we acknowledge that we have a risk there, and the actions that we are taking to reduce this risk, as Fernando mentioned, are one, reducing the inventory levels, two, reducing the the transformation timeframe, and 3, revisiting the hedging strategy.
Okay, got it. Just very quickly, I'm very curious on the first answer regarding the cement pricing. Is there, if you could just give us an idea of how much of a price gap difference is you see between, you know, bulk and bag that would compensate for that, that would increase actually the average pricing so much to compensate maybe for energy costs. And just going back also to metals, so should we think about the profitability per ton going back to, I don't know, levels from the third quarter last year, or, just thinking about how fast that recovery of that particular business will come. Thanks.
Sure. To your first question on pricing and energy cost, there is, of course, a difference between bulk and bags, and this is driven because of the nature of the buyers, and that is why we have chosen to be in a mix of 70-30%. As we mentioned, we temporarily reduced that in order to first allocate the volume and then slowly but steadily go back to this mix. This, of course, will help somehow to offset the potential energy increases, but also optimizations or better practices that we have implemented in the operations, along with running the facilities at optimum capacity level. This also will help to offset the impacts from power. Going to metals, can you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, sure. Just if you could give us an idea of the target of the EBITDA per ton.
Right.
I mean, if that should come back to last year's, or what's the idea there?
Right, okay. So just to give you an example, the copper price in September closed to around 2.60 pounds per cents per pound, and right now the price is closer to 2.8. So we have already been seeing a recovery in the price that, according to our pass-through strategy, will help us again translate this into the market. Now, as we mentioned, through this pass-through, we translate these fluctuations partially to the market, but we still have an exposure of about 30 days. That is what we are trying to reduce. In summary, the recovery of the copper price surely will help, and we are expecting a better fourth quarter.
And just, Mauricio, just to complement the Juan Francisco's first answer, just to let you know that as from this quarter, we have put in place a very strict cost control plan in the cement Mexico, which has helped us to mitigate the increases in all the energetics, electricity, and fossil fuels. So this has helped us a lot, and it has proven to be very successful. So we're continuing on with this plan, which is very aggressive.
Ron, thank you. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Our next question is from Alejandra Obregón with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. Actually, I have two questions in the U.S. cement business. The first one is related to pricing. Could you please give us a sense of what you're seeing in terms of pricing, particularly in the northeast region of the country, particularly after McKinney's has announced a new terminal in New York? And then I have a follow-up in the U.S. as well.
Sure. Thank you, Alejandra. Probably going by regions, as you well stated, the dynamics of the markets are quite different in the three regions, with the main facility we cover the New England region, with the Pennsylvania facility we cover the Midwest, and with the South Carolina facility we cover the Southeast. So in particular in the New England region, we are facing tougher competition from McKinney's, and prices have come down in about $4 per ton. Also, volumes were affected, and we believe that at least for this year, we've reached a kind of equilibrium. This does not mean that it might change in the following year, so we are taking the necessary steps in our strategy to kind of shield us from this competition. In the other regions, prices are more stable. Also in the Southeast region, prices increase at about $3 per ton, Q/Q, and is the region that is showing better market dynamics for us.
Thank you. And just going back to the Northeast, where you were saying that prices have come down $4 per ton, what are these steps that you're taking in order to shield from the competition that you mentioned?
It is mainly a two-way strategy. For one, we are making a long-term agreement with our customers and making strategies to create or value the fidelity in terms of rebates. Second, we are optimizing the facility costs in order to be able to face this tougher competition.
Thank you. And then just to follow up, if I may, on Giant, what's the status of the intercompany loan between Giant and Elementia as of today?
Can you repeat the question, please?
Sure. What's the status of the intercompany loan between Giant and Elementia today?
Sure. I mean, it remains very similar to the levels of the starting point. If you remember, the way that we did the transaction is we give a loan to complete the prepayment of the convert, and so it is still there. Of course, with the figures for this year, the cash flow of the operation is very compromised, so it
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear us?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay. So did you hear the full answer, or shall I repeat it?
No, I think it was clear. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Alejandro.
We'll take our next question from Santiago Tarasena with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for taking my questions. I have three questions regarding cement operations in Mexico. My first question is, I would like to have more color on which specific fuels increased in prices. And in the case of petcoke, do you have a specific estimate on how much of the cost increased? Regarding the grinding facilities, what import price of cement are you assuming to model these projects? And the third question would be, what was the volume growth on a sequential basis in Mexico, and have you lost or won market share during the quarter? Thank you.
Thank you, Santiago. First of in pricing. So as Fernando mentioned, we are not expecting any movements in regarding pricing, because right now the market is somehow contracted. This is very aligned to the statistical cycle of election year and post-election year in Mexico. So it is, I mean, what we are trying to say here is it is not something to be worried or very worried about. It is natural behavior of the market. So again, we are not expecting price movements in the following some 9 months.
Yeah, just for the case of pet coke, what was the increase or an estimate of the increase in the cost of pet coke during the quarter? Do you have an estimate?
The highest impact that we have had in terms of energetics is power. Power has increased 52%. And
okay.
is the one that has been moving faster. Of course, there is also a movement in pet coke, but it is not that much relevant. Now, seeing the price trends of oil, it is likely that pet coke will somehow adjust, but it hasn't shown any important increases.
Okay, thank you.
To your question regarding additional volumes or volume expectations for the following quarters, since we have already reached optimum capacity utilization level, the volume growth will be much moderate in the fourth quarter, and it will remain pretty much steady in the first half of the year, or until we start the operations of the new grinding facility in Yucatan.
Okay. And regarding the grinding facilities, what import price of cement are you assuming to model this project? Could we have more detail in it?
We will not be importing cement. We will be importing clinker, and the price that remains to us. Sorry,
okay.
Santiago.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No worries.
Thank you. Our next question is from Eric Nagelart with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the call. It's kind of a follow-up question from the previous one. Regarding electricity prices in Mexico, are you seeking any kind of long-term contract with CFE in order to mitigate the possible impacts from fluctuations in electricity prices going forward?
That is correct. Thank you, Eric, for your question. That is correct. We have already put in place, we have a new energy director in Elementa, which has been working with us for more than almost half a year. He has been working very hard in closing this midterm negotiations with many suppliers. So as we speak, we already have closed and we have some deals. So we are covered there. We're fine there.
As a follow-up, just what time frames do these contracts have usually?
It is, I mean, the contract so far is 1 year?
No, it's a 3-year contract that we have already negotiated and signed. So that one has been already signed, and we are working on another one from the year 3 to I think to 10 years. But I mean, we have our options there. We haven't closed that one. From here to 3 years, we have already closed it.
All right. Thank you very much.
And as a reminder, it is star and one on your touch-tone phone for questions. We'll go next to Eduardo Altamirano with HSBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my question. In terms of the billing systems divisions in both the U.S. and Mexico, I wanted to see when the expected turnaround is for both of those, and also if what we can expect in terms of an outlook for the LATAM division and what, let's say, would be going ahead in terms of, let's say, this new cost environment that you're seeing, especially with because of the changes in raw materials. So just wanted to understand a little bit further on those two divisions. Thank you.
Eduardo, we were not able to hear you well. Can you repeat the question, please? Sorry.
Hi, apologies. No, it was as it relates to building systems divisions in both the U.S. and LATAM. In the U.S., it's just wanted to see if you have any expected timing on the turnaround, if there are any issues related to a slowdown in any sort of housing or any sort of construction that you're seeing, at least within the regions in which you're present in the U.S., and as well as the building systems division in LATAM and what we can expect from the technology change, whether this lower sort of margin environment is more of the new norm, or it's something that we could expect eventual convergence or at least even higher to what the previous technology implementation was. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to try to answer you a little because I did not hear you very well. It seems that Juan Francisco heard you well. What I can tell you about Building Systems U.S. is that we are on the right track. Volume has been growing, sales as well. Well, volume is practically the same. But the thing here is the extra cost that we acquired because of the reopening of the Terre Haute plant. So I think we're on the right track. The market is there. It is a cost issue, and the only thing is to hit as fast as we can the break-even point from that plant. This year it has cost us nearly 17 million pesos, no? So we are about to hit that break-even. We are assuming that first quarter next year we will be already there. So we see a bright future for the Elementia Building Systems USA.
And Eduardo, if I catch your question, was also regarding some index that we might follow or that we follow in order to see the market behavior. So yes, we follow housing starts and housing permits, not only in a kind of country view, but in the regions, specific regions that we are targeting, and specifically in this moment in the Midwest, that is where the Indiana facility is targeting. Overall, probably you've seen, the Southeast, Central South, are the regions that are growing faster in the country, followed by the Midwest. So we believe, the West Coast. So we believe that for building systems, we are very well positioned. And one of the things that we also follow there, in particularly for the Southeast region, is demographics. The Carolinas are becoming a very attractive alternative for retirement, and so population is growing, jobs are growing, demand of housing is growing, et cetera, et cetera.
And now, Eduardo, going to your, I don't know if we answer the Building Systems U.S. question, if you have any further questions there.
No, it's all right. Thank you.
Okay. Great. So now going to Building Systems LATAM. As you know, this change in technology has been tougher than we originally thought. At the very beginning, just to give you an example, our cost increased close to 27%, our COGS, and now we've been able to come down, and this increase versus last year is close to 12%. No, so I think we're on the right track. The learning curve is practically over. But also, all the costs that we have incurred regarding the restructuring or capacity rationalization or the changes in raw materials. So all these costs, I mean, have impacted us a lot during this year. So if you take a look at the volume and sales in LATAM, I mean, we're doing a good job. We're growing a bit. But it is a cost issue. So that's why we feel pretty confident that from first quarter 2019, we will have very good news.
And also, again, if we understand your question properly, you were asking on market dynamics for the region. So we believe that, again, oil price trend should help a lot of or most of the countries in the region where we have operations. So Colombia, Ecuador, and Bolivia has a strong influence on oil prices, and we believe that certainly it will help if prices continue the current trend.
Thank you. We'll go next to Hernan Kisluk with MetLife. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. It's relating to the comments that you make about the covenants in the report. So could you please describe this 3.75 times covenant that you mentioned on the report, meaning which debt is it, which kind of covenant is it?
Sure, and then the covenant is a leverage ratio, and it's a net debt leverage. The 3.75 times EBITDA.
It considers the last 12 months EBITDA and the net debt. So it is a kind of a simple calculation, and as Alfredo mentioned, is a leverage ratio.
Okay, I get that. But which debt is carrying this covenant? Is it the bond? Is it a syndicated loan?
Oh, okay. So it's for the bank debt.
The bilateral agreement.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And is it an incurrence covenant?
Excuse me, I didn't hear that very well.
Is it a covenant that prevents you from incurring in more debt, or is it a maintenance covenant?
No, it's the maintenance covenant.
Okay. Thanks. And also, in the indenture for the bond, you have an incurrence limitation regarding a fixed charge ratio, coverage ratio, that is 2 times. Do you have the figure for that ratio right now?
3 times. Yes, it's 3 times.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And our next question is from Jean Bruni with BBVA. Please go ahead. Your line's open.
Hi there. Maybe just one question on the capital increase. I think I did understand the logic behind or the justification to lower the to use the proceeds potentially for the cement business, but I don't really understand the timing. I mean, the last time you did a capital increase, it was at 22 per share. Like you're doing it at 12. And maybe what would be the use of proceeds in terms of the cement industry? Do you want to invest in the current asset base or in other businesses? Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. First of all, the use, first of all, the timing. So we held the shareholders meeting on Monday 22. We are expecting that we will publish by this Friday, and since then the commission sets a time frame of 15 days, so it will lead us around the 10th of November. That will be the execution of the rights offering. Then, as I mentioned, if there is on purchase shares, the board of directors has already decided that we will open a second round to give again the same chances to all of our shareholders. Again, if there is still on acquired shares, the board of directors will have the decision either to cancel those shares or to allocate them in the controlling shareholders.
And the funds, Jan, as I stated before, will be mainly used to improve our leverage ratio, but also and also for potential additional investments in the cement division.
Yeah, as for this investment, it's the current asset base you want to improve, if you have some expansion or is for other businesses in the cement industry.
Yeah. Mainly it will be to continue the expansion of the cement business, in projects like the
grinding facility in Yucatán.
Right. And also, it will help on the leveraging the company. And again, this shows the commitment of the shareholders, controlling shareholders, with the company and the covenants.
Okay, cheers.
Once again, star and one for questions. We'll go next to Delphine Palazzo with BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Hi, hello. Thanks for taking my question. I wanted to know about your deleveraging plan. How is it going?
What plan, Delphine? Sorry?
About the deleveraging plan?
Okay, sure. Well, first of all, we are taking kind of operative steps to improve cash through working capital improvements. We have already released some $350 million from December through September, and we will continue improving working capital. From the operating standpoint, we are expecting that the fourth quarter EBITDA generation will also help increasing the cash position, and since the debt will not increase, that will help to lower the leverage ratio. That is without considering the capital increase. We will receive the capital increase, and a piece of it will be used for the grinding project in Yucatán, and then we will still have a big piece of it remaining for future investments.
Okay, great.
Also, probably it's worth mentioning, as we mentioned since the beginning of the year, the total capex for this year will be around 80 to 90 million. So far, we are close to 60. So it is more likely that we will end the year on close to 80. For the following year, the organic capex will remain on around 60 million, and on top of that, we will have this Yucatán project capex and the U.S. cement capex that we are placing there according to the geo plan that we stated.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Once again, it's star and one for your questions. And we have a follow-up from Alejandra Obregón with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, and thank you for taking my next question. I'm sorry to go back to the offering, and just to follow up on the previous question, what's the rationale of doing an equity offering versus debt, for example? Why funding this project on such a small offering via equity? And then can you please repeat the dynamics of the offering? I'm not sure I got that right. Sorry for going back to that. Thank you.
Sure, no problem. Well, to your first question, again, we are committed on financial discipline that includes not over-leveraging the company, and also considering the general political and economic environment in Latin America, we'd rather not to over-leverage the company. That is one of the rationales for the capital increase instead of additional debts. For the time frame, I will just repeat somehow the dates. On Monday 22, we did the shareholders meeting. The publication will be done in this Friday 26th. And from there is 15 days to the execution of the transaction. So it leads us to the beginning of the week of the 12th of November. So if you, I mean, to have the funds ready. then if that very same day, the board of directors might decide to launch a second round that will be executed in the following day. And then the board of directors might take the decision on that very same day what to do with the potentially remaining shares. So we are expecting to conclude the full transaction by November 14-15.
Got it. Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Declan Hanlon with Santander. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the question. Just a couple of quick follow-ups. The new capital, was that at the request of the bank group, given that you've come very close on your maintenance covenant, as previously stated?
Didn't hear you very well. Can you repeat the question?
Sure. The capital increase, was that at the request of your bank group, given that you came very close on your maintenance covenant that we've previously discussed?
No, it's clear. Thank you for repeating the question. No, the answer is no. It was not a request from the banks. It was a proposal that we took to the board of directors, and they approved, they agreed. Again, the main target is to not to over-leverage the company and support the company for the growth opportunities that we are seeing.
Does your maintenance covenant have a step down? Does it decrease?
It will decrease to 3.5 in 2020.
2020, okay. Does it have a grace period in the case of a violation?
Excuse me, can you repeat the question?
Does your bank facility have a grace period in the event of a covenant violation?
Yes, we have a grace period, but we won't be pushing the covenants.
Understood.
We can deleverage the company with the working capital plan that Francisco just talked about. And
yep.
We think we can be below 3.5 times within this year and in 2019 below that.
So, well, pro forma your capital increase, you're below 3.5 times, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And it does appear we have no further questions. I'll return the floor to our speakers for closing remarks.
Great. Thank you. And as always, thank you for your continued interest and certainly your trust and support to Elementia. As final remark, I'd like to emphasize the role that each of the business units has and that we are progressing accordingly. So cement is where we're going and it is our focus. Metal products will continue to be our main cash flow generator. Building Systems US equals growth, and Building Systems LATAM equals cash generator in the short term and transformation in the midterm. So once again, thank you. Thank you very much. Please feel free to contact our investor relation team or ourselves directly to any further questions you may have. Have a nice rest of the day.